That's right. I'm going to jump on social media and I'm going to tweet about it until my fingers bleed. I might even send an Instagram or a Vine. That's right. And on that tweet, in that tweet, and however many characters I get, I am going to threaten. That's right. If I don't get what I want, I'm going to riot. And if that doesn't work, then by God, me and my friend Mark, we're going to stop watching.
Okay.
That's right.
Are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Hey, it's Kevin Nealon, and you're listening to the Homie Broadcast.
Yeah.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on RadioSt.Pete.com. My name is William Lewis Koontz. So happy to be back with you again this week. How are you? Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for, I'm sure you were asking. You were curious, right? I think I might be dying. But other than that, I'm fine. I've been doing this thing, like, I don't know if you're capable of doing this. I'm not. And I think maybe most people my age probably are able to control themselves at this time. I went out last night. My buddy Zach Townsend calls me and goes, hey, let's go, what do you say we go get a beer or two at J-Wags? And I was like, I don't know. You know, it's a Monday. I got a long week ahead. I got, you know, things to do. I got to work and all that good stuff. And he goes, oh, come on. We'll just have two beers. All right, two beers it is. So probably six beers and three pickleback shots later, I wake up the next morning and I'm dying. I am dying. It's impossible to go out and have two beers, right? That doesn't happen in a normal scenario with your buddy. Like you go and if you just have two beers, just get a Pepsi and sip on that. I'm never doing that again. I'm never tricking myself again. I've done it to myself probably about three or four times the past couple weeks. Yeah, where I'm going to have a few drinks, and then I'm cashing in. And my mom always says, she goes, hey, be careful with drinking because alcoholism runs in our family. I'm pretty sure it runs in everybody's family that ever lived for all time of all history and people. It runs in everybody's family. There's always the drunk uncle in everybody's family. Not to say that she's not right. You should watch your drinking, you know. I told my dad one time, I was going through a tough time a couple years ago. My girlfriend left me, shocker, and just not doing well in school, and there was a bunch of other stuff going on, and I was drinking a lot. I was getting to the point where I was bringing, you know, flasks with me into bars and taking a swig out of the flask, and then, you know, trying to save money because I'm cheap, but also just to get the extra boost there. And I finally asked him, like, yo, I'm a little bit concerned about my drinking. And he goes, well, if you're concerned about it, you're fine. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good advice. And it's true. If you're thinking about it, then you're probably okay. But, yeah, it's important to keep things in perspective. Anyway, marching right along, we got Justin Grant, the barfly from the Tampa Bay Times and TBT, goes around to bars and drinks. Speaking of booze, right up my alley and things that I enjoy. So hopefully he's going to tell us about all the good places to drink here, pretty much anywhere. Is there really such a thing as a bad bar? I'm going to ask Justin, but I don't think so. I mean, you certainly prefer other places, but if they serve, you know, booze, they're probably okay with me, and cheap booze. That's why I like unsolicited plug for J-Wags on 4th Street. It's a good place. Bartenders are always very attractive, and they got decently priced beverages there. So, yeah. What's up, J-Wags? But as far as people who are sponsoring the show officially, I do want to give special thanks to Tap House 61, my boy Joe, Tap House 61, formerly Sly Bar, no more. I don't even think Joe wants me to mention that it was ever Sly Bar. I can't help it, though, Joe. I'm sorry. It's going to take me some time, and everybody I talk to still calls it Sly Bar. But it just happened. This name change just happened. So check out taphouse61.com. Check them out on Facebook at taphouse61. They got a bunch of, I think they do trivia on Wednesdays. Don't hold me to that. Check the Facebook or the website just to be sure. But they do. I tell Joe all the time, too. I'm like, just tell me what you want me to say. Can you please help me help you here? And he goes, yeah, you're good. Just do whatever. Okay. Thanks, Joe. So taphouse61.com. Check them out. Truvy Salon and Spa, Chrissy Parker, does the best hairs and other spa treatments. The best. 8908 4th Street North, Unit B, St. Petersburg, Florida. Make an appointment. Call her 727-329-9751. Check her on Facebook. It's Truvy, spelled T-R-U-V as in Victor, Y, salonandspa.com. And, or on Facebook, Truvy Salon Spa, TruvySalonSpa.com. Again, I told Chrissy same thing. And she goes, this is whatever you want. It's cool. Okay. I hope this is good. I don't know what I'm doing here, folks. So hopefully it's good. And finally, we have a new sponsor this month. And hopefully we'll continue on. Patel Law, PLLC, small business attorney, Cal Patel. He's the man, dude. I met Cal a couple years ago at one of the St. Pete Chamber events, and he was just starting out with his practice, and, you know, I was telling him about, he was interested in what I was doing, and he was asking me questions about it, and I was like, you know, we're looking for sponsors of this thing, of course, and he says, well, you know, I'm just starting out, but, you know, maybe when I get established, we can work together. I said, great. So out of the blue, a couple weeks ago or months ago, he emails me and goes, hey, are you still doing your thing? And I was like, yes, I am. And we made plans to get together and meet, and just our schedules were so different, and he's busy, I'm busy, but finally we got together last Thursday, and, you know, after that he decided to become a sponsor of this thing, but also gave me a freaking great idea that I had never even really considered. I mean, I guess, you know, you kind of vaguely think about it, but he goes, why don't you start a podcasting company, consulting company? And I said, I don't know. Why don't I? He goes, you should. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. I go, okay. So I'm starting a podcast consulting company on top of the other things that I'm doing. So this is just one of the things. You know, Cal's just, he's a great guy. He's very knowledgeable. He knows what he's doing. And he can help you with any of your lawyering needs. I'm certainly, he sold me. So check him out at, it's Patel Law PLLC. Again, I asked Cal, too, should I say anything in particular? And he goes, nope, just, you know, do your thing. So these people put a lot of faith in me, and I don't know if they should. But he's located at 360 Central Avenue, Suite 800 here in St. Pete. You can call him, 727-279-5037. If you ever thought about starting a business, he would definitely be the guy to talk to. And his website is FLPatelLAW.com, Florida Patel Law, just abbreviation for Florida. So thanks, Cal. Appreciate it. And Justin Grant is coming up this week on the podcast, The Barfly, TBT, professional drinker and writer. And, yeah, if you've ever thought about, if you're a business owner in here locally in Tampa Bay and ever thought about doing podcasts, why don't you check me out? I can help you do that. I do my own. I distribute mine. I record mine. And I can help you do the same for your business there. So if you're interested, check out Homemade Podcasts with an S. homemadepodcasts.com, and the site just went live a few days ago. Honestly, I need to work on it still. I just wanted to get it up and out and online, but it has my contact info and all that. You can find that. It's good stuff. So very exciting, very scary, and Justin Grant, TBT's Barfly coming up this week on the homemade broadcast here on RadioSaintPete.com, always on podcast at HMBRadio.com. So let's talk to Justin. Justin Grant, the TBT Barfly on the wall. Welcome to the homemade broadcast.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man. I was just telling this story about, and I swear I didn't plan this. This isn't one of those things where,
sure.
But I was talking about, I went out drinking with my buddy, and we said, we're going to get two beers, and then we're going to go home.
Yeah.
And I didn't get home till 3 a.m. and was a wreck the next day. I don't think it's possible to do that at this point.
No, every single time I go to a bar, it's for one beer only or two beers only. I don't think I've ever done that.
It never works out. It's I said I'm just getting a Pepsi next time, but we decided to do this because I don't know. Like I was, and then my mom's like, "Be careful, because alcoholism runs in our family. Like alcoholism runs in everybody's family. Okay, everybody's a booze hound."
Yeah, I hear that probably once a week, I think.
But you got a cool job. I mean, your job is reviewing, or not reviewing, but going to these places and kind of getting the vibe and kind of putting it out.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. You know, I was talking to you a little bit before the show, and what I mentioned is I like to drive by places and, you know, see new spots that I'm not familiar with, and I'm curious about it, so I like to go and check them out and see what they're all about, and then I write about it, and I figure people probably have a similar curiosity, so it's a good way to find new places, discover new spots, and maybe if there's a place that you've seen before and you've always wondered what it was like, I try and get to the bottom of it.
So is this thing where you have to do your own research, you kind of drive by a place and be like, oh, there's a new place, or do people like give you heads up? I'm sure you're at the point now where people are like, yo, check this place out.
Yeah, it's a mix. Sometimes I get press releases and heads up when a new place is going to open. I try and keep new places on my radar all the time. Sometimes my editor will hit me up with a place that's going to open, or you know, Laura Riley, food critic, will shoot me an email about a place that she saw. But most of the time it's just me looking at new places and deciding to check them out. Sometimes I scour the internet a little bit and I look to see if any new bars have opened in neighborhoods that I haven't been to lately. You know, I'm pretty tight in the brewery scene, so I always hear about new beer bars and breweries opening through the grapevine just by virtue of being so involved in it. But that's pretty much it. Yeah, I just do my own research and see what looks good on the calendar, what looks interesting, what I think I can write a story about and take it from there.
So how did this column come about? Was this a thing where it kind of happened organically, or did you have this plan and have to go to the editor? Or?
Yeah, actually, I was in school for writing, and I didn't really have any experience writing a column or anything like that, but I had a job as a telemarketer at the Times, actually. I'd quit my job. I was a pharmacy technician for a long time, and I hated it, and I wanted out of the industry, so I quit without a backup plan because I was just miserable. And turned out it wasn't that easy to get a new job that quickly. So I went down to the Times. They had some kind of vaguely worded ad in the paper, and it turned out to be a telemarketing position, which I wasn't thrilled about, but the pay was good, and it was for a product that I liked. You know, I've been a fan of the Times for a long time. I've read it since I was a kid. So I figured, hey, this couldn't be the worst thing ever, and I worked there for a while. I liked the environment. I liked the people, and then at the time, they had Wade DeTangelo writing a column. It was the earlier version of this Barfly column. And he had moved, if I'm not mistaken, out to Colorado. He's back now, but at the time he had left the paper and he was living out west. So I noticed that and I thought, hey, I'm pretty knowledgeable about this kind of stuff. It's, you know, beer and booze is kind of a hobby of mine. So I figured I'd try and see if I can get my foot in the door, and I looked up the entertainment editor, who at the time was Jay Cridlin. He works at the Times proper now. But
he's been on here.
Oh, great. Yeah. Jay's great. And he was the TBT's entertainment editor at the time. So I sent him an email and scheduled a meeting with him. It was a good thing that I worked at the Times. I was able to just kind of take the elevator down and meet up with him. And I just basically pitched it to him. And he said, why don't you come up with your first three columns and write them out. We'll take a look at them, see how they are. And you know, it just so happened that they were looking for someone to kind of revive that column. So it was perfect timing, basically. So I did a couple of pilot columns, and he really liked them and kept going. And now I think it's about 6 years later, something like that.
Wow. I was a pharmacy technician, too, at one point.
Sorry to hear that.
I actually kind of liked it, and this is kind of a scummy thing. I think that the limitations are passed at this point, so we'll get in trouble. But I remember I used to clean the bottoms, and I was young at this time. I was 20 or something. used to, like, you know, pills would fall underneath the, you know, what do you call that? Right under that threshold thing.
I'm not sure. Pills would fall everywhere. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So I would just reach my hands and kind of clean it out and just pick out the ones I wanted and then throw the rest away. I think that's why I got fired, too, because I did that in front of one of the pharmacists. I started throwing stuff away, like, and then they saw me and I was like, oh, hey, and then just dumped them all in the garbage and got fired. Yeah, that was not one of my proudest moments in my life. But,
well, you're right, though. The statute of limitations is probably up on that, so you should be okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
If anyone's listening to this, that's... you can't arrest them.
Long gone. I kind of like the job, though. Were you wanting to do pharmacy for a period of time?
No, never, really. It was my first job, actually. I got a job there when I was 16 just because it was close to where I lived with my parents at the time. And I went in just looking for any job, and they had an opening in the pharmacy, which was kind of fortunate because it ended up being a lot better of a job than just working normal retail or working up front as a cashier in the photo lab or whatever. So it was a good job, and I was a tech for a long time. I became the lead pharmacy tech for a while, so I worked my way up the ladder about as far as I could go without actually going to pharmacy school, which I had absolutely no desire whatsoever to do. I don't work too well in a retail environment. I didn't really like the job. I didn't like the industry that much. So it was time to do something else. I wanted to do something a little bit more creative, so that's kind of what I ended up doing.
Yeah, I kind of tested the waters and thought maybe I'll go to be a pharmacist, but I'm dumb. Like, I don't have those type of skills that you need to be a pharmacist, like the chemistry and the math. It'll, I wouldn't have been able to do that. But it was at one of those big box stores that I was at, and I got stuck. I remember one time I was in the pharmacy Christmas time. Hey, we need you to go to the, you know, this department for a while. And I just, my stomach dropped because dealing with people like that, people in the pharmacy are bad enough because you're dealing with the elderly and, you know, sick people who aren't as understanding with time. And so that was bad enough. But Christmas time on a, you know, at a big box store was just the worst, having those interactions.
Yeah, I actually had a different experience with Christmas time. I loved working during Christmas time, especially on Christmas proper, because they would pay us triple time for being there.
Dang.
And then we also got some additional holiday pay. I don't remember the – all I remember is it was a huge payday if you worked, and it was easy because nobody would come in.
Nobody would come in, right.
So I just worked at a chain drugstore, and it was great. It was, like, the best time to work. But, like you said, the big problem with pharmacy customer service is the people are in there buying something that they don't want to be buying. A lot of times they're sick. They're not feeling well. And so I totally understand. But, you know, the people come in there – upset and in an unpleasant mood, and then if anything goes wrong, it's it's always your
you're getting the brunt of it. Yeah.
And I've never been a fan of the modern American customer service philosophy that the customer's always right, because we would have a lot of very, very unreasonable people come in and just treat us like absolute scum, and they would make unreasonable demands, and every single time invariably they would take it up the ladder to the top management, and they would always get what they wanted. I remember one time somebody complained long enough until the manager just basically said, okay, what do you want? Pick something out in the store. So they went and got like a digital camera from the photo lab. Yeah. That's
the
whole thing. And I just, to me, I just hated that environment. I just thought, you know, these people aren't always right. I understand people are coming in and having a bad day, but come on, man. I treat people like humans.
You know what the thing about that is too? Sometimes people just want to yell. Like, you just have to let them put up, okay, yeah, and then they feel better, and then they go away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I had plenty of experience with that. I was fine with that. The people that just came in and yelled, okay, you know, that's routine. But people would get pretty abusive, and I'm not a fan of having to take it.
So, yeah. Especially for $7.75 or whatever. I think that's what I got paid.
I do a little bit better than that.
Oh, that's good. So when you were in school, you took writing in school. Was it like an English degree?
Yeah, English degree. I originally was interested, and still am, but, you know, it's one of those things that I'll never do, interested in filmmaking. And I wanted to go to film school in Orlando, but it just didn't seem like a good risk-reward scenario to me. Very expensive, not super practical, and it's not really an industry that you can just go to school in and then just get a job directing movies. You know?
Right,
so I figured, hey, you know, what's one thing I could do that's actually practical that I can build up my skills in that regard and maybe have something marketable outside of that industry? So I thought writing. You know, I could work on my storytelling ability and learn to write, which was something that my teachers in school had always told me I was good at. So that's what I did. I went and figured English degree is pretty good and focus on creative writing. I could learn about stuff I'm already interested in, and I'm interested in writing as well, and this could have peripheral benefits mm-hmm. to other things that I'm interested in. So, you know, an English degree, of course, the old joke is that it's just like having a psychology degree. It's, yeah. you know, unless you're going to teach.
I also have an English degree.
There you go. So you understand.
Yeah, I completely understand.
But you know, I know it's a novel concept, but I went to college for learning, not necessarily to have a degree that would get me a job. So I learned a lot about English and writing and literature and so on. So it was great.
The thing about, I don't know, where'd you go to school?
University of South Florida and SPC before that. So.
Same thing. Yeah. It was a lot of just reading books.
Yeah.
I felt like I could have just done the same thing at home, just reading these books. Like you find a outline online of these books that you should read, then you just don't have to do the papers, but you read the books. And
yeah, that's part of it. That's the part I enjoyed the most, probably, because I like reading. But I think it was the feedback from the professors and the breakdown and looking at various underlying thematic elements, looking at the nuts and bolts of it, and not just reading for the story, but looking at it analytically, breaking it down and learning how to reproduce it and to write with a particular style. That's what I found most useful. What was your focus in?
It was professional and technical writing.
Oh, okay.
Which I got to the point in my schooling where I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. So when I got to USF from SPC, they put me in journalism, and I was like, that's fine. I don't know. And then I was like, no, I don't want to do this. I think I'll do business. Failed the entire semester. It wasn't for me. And then they were like, well, what do you like to do? So I said, well, I doodle a lot in my notebook. And they said, well, why don't you try like art or something? I was like, okay. And so then I started with graphic design, did that for a year and a half. Nope, I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not good on the computer. I'm tech illiterate. So, and it's a lot of playing on the computer.
Yep.
So, and then I spent 6 months doing push-ups in my room with no direction, and I finally went back in there and said, just whatever gets me out of here, that's what I'm going to do. So that's what it was.
Technical writing is a good field, though, especially if you like doodling. You can do instruction manuals.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird, boring job.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it pays pretty well, though.
It does.
It'd be kind of fun writing instruction manuals. I don't know. It seems easy.
Well, you have to see, that's what I think is alluring about the English degree, because if you like want to do secondary education, a lot of the ones are English majors, because you know how to, you kind of learn how to communicate directly with people, you know, through writing.
Yeah.
So that's a benefit of that. But I don't know. I feel like it was a waste of money.
Yeah, that's college for you.
Did you get loans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I don't think I'll ever pay them off at this rate.
No, I recently looked at my loans, and I noticed that they seemed very close to the amount that I originally borrowed, despite having been paying them for a while. And they are. They're just the same amount that I borrowed. So I haven't made any progress on them, really.
Me either. And I think actually mine are steadily going up, believe it or not. And I just don't see an end in sight. It's kind of a shame. But, I mean, I feel like I did learn a lot in college. There's benefits to it. But I feel like I learned more from taking the art classes more than actual English. Because we had to, like, I remember the first day we took the studio art class. And they said, okay, here's your assignment. This is kind of what we're going for. They just said some loose, you know, kind of do whatever you want, but within these little parameters. And then they said, okay, we're going to present, we're going to showcase these now. We're going to put them up and critique these. Your classmates are going to critique. So I'm not doing that. I'm not going to open myself up to that. But then you kind of get used to it. So the biggest thing that I learned in college was getting trashed pretty much and not breaking down and crying.
Yeah. That's a valuable skill.
It is. So, I mean, was that worth 50 grand? I don't know. But, you know, it definitely helped, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's the rub with college. I mean, it's unless you're going into an industry-specific field and where if you're going to be a pharmacist, you go to pharmacy school and get your license and all that.
Yeah.
It's all very speculative. You know, hopefully learn a little bit. Hopefully don't spend too much.
I kind of hurt my friend Jen's feelings one time because I said, you shouldn't go to college unless you're going to be a doctor or an architect or something in the STEM field because you're just wasting your money. She's super passionate about literature.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, okay. So what do you – and I was like, what are you going to – you're going to become a teacher? Because that's pretty much all you can do. And that's fine. But, you know, I think I hurt her feelings with that. But I still pretty much feel that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's – not too many directions you can go in with literature.
Right.
By the way, I've got to apologize. I normally don't sound this nasally. I was telling you before, I've been sick for a week straight.
Yeah. So, it's going around. Something's going around. I'm going to the doctor Friday, I was telling you, because I feel like I cannot get enough air into my body. And I feel like I just have this fluid or something going on at the bottom of my lungs. So that's a little concerning. Of course, my first thought is lung cancer, and I'll have a few weeks to live.
Oh, sure.
And could be a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, you WebMD'd it, right? So
I didn't. I won't do that anymore because
it's always cancer. Yeah,
always.
Every single time.
Yeah. So I'm going to go to the doctor Friday and see what happens. But, yeah, something's going around. Whenever the weather, finally comes the summer or whenever the weather starts to change, usually I get it, but...
Yeah, it could be some sort of allergies or something. It'd be good to get it diagnosed.
So yes, definitely.
I'm sure it's nothing.
Well, I quit smoking 6 months ago, once with the new year. So, I didn't quit. I stopped. So I'm thinking maybe it has something like that because you never quit.
What's the distinction? Oh, okay.
Because it's usually my pattern has been 2 years on, 2 years off.
Really?
Smoke for a year, quit. Wow. Yeah, you never really get – but I'm done. I want to be done now. I don't want to – it's a nasty habit. It's expensive.
Sure.
Because I went from cigarettes, and then I was smoking the American Spirits, which were $9 a pack, and then went to the vape pens, the disposable vape pens, which those are good, but I don't think they're still, good for you. I'm sure they're doing you a net negative to your
body.
Yeah,
what's the deal with the popcorn lung? You heard about that?
That's what I've heard, and that's what I'm thinking, maybe I messed up my lungs with that, because that was 6 months of that.
Yeah, probably not.
I hope not.
No more than with cigarettes, I wouldn't think.
I hope not. I don't know. Justin Grant here is the TBT barfly here on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So you said you've been doing your column for how long?
I think it's been about 6 years.
Damn, how old are you?
I'm almost sure. 34.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm at the age where I have to think about it for a second.
Yeah. So is this something you can make your living off of?
Probably not.
Do you have another job?
Yeah.
What do you? What's your day job?
We'll talk about it off air. It's nothing illegal, but...
Okay, fair enough.
It's complex.
Yeah. It's hard, being in this media field to make any money, I'm noticing, and it's scary to me.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, a lot of the money that you make is off advertising, not off the product itself. So it's harder and harder to monetize any sort of, in your case, a podcast. Nobody buys podcasts. That's the whole model. It's free, downloadable content. So you can make ad revenue. Same with websites, same with that. That's the problem that, newspapers are having now. It's just that it's all about the ad revenue. So fewer people read, the fewer ads are coming in, the thinner the papers get, chain reaction. So they're shifting a lot of it to online content. Then you have to drive people to the sites, get the ad content on there too. So yeah, I don't know. It's tough. There are people that make really good money with various types of writing. I don't think any of them work in the newspaper industry.
Yeah. So, unless they're a columnist for 25 years or something, that's probably...
Yeah, even then, I don't know. I could certainly be wrong. I don't know what these people make. None of my business. The only people I know of that are making big bucks writing are best-selling novelists or people that do types of copywriting. Copywriting can be pretty profitable. Mm-hmm. Just doing online web copy content, stuff like that. But yeah.
Is it ethical, let's say, if someone paid you to write an article about their bar?
No, I wouldn't think so for the column that I do. I'm sure that happens. A lot of places will send out press releases or they'll invite people to events and festivals. I do go to festivals and events on occasion that I get invited to, and obviously the reason that they invite me is so that I'll give them some sort of favorable press, but I don't ever treat it any differently than something I had gone to on my own accord. If it's newsworthy, I'll write about it. If not, I won't, I would never. And I do have people contact me occasionally saying, hey, we'd love to have you come check out our new place or whatever. And occasionally I will, but I won't do it when I won't tell them I'm coming.
I always just
go in anonymously. I don't ever set up anything with the owners because then I'm not going to really get a good idea of what a place is like. I'm going to get the version that they want me to see. Just like if you're a food critic, you're not going to let them know who you are coming in because they're going to put extra effort into your dish.
Right.
I just want to go in and get the average bar experience. And I think I'm pretty anonymous looking, so I don't think anyone. I don't think I've ever been recognized.
A generic white male, yeah, you kind of fit into that that quota there. Yes, I wonder if that's why Laura Riley has she doesn't have a real photo of herself.
That's exactly why.
So people won't recognize her. Oh boy, forgot to turn off my phone there. Phone Sorry break. About that. And it's mom, of course.
Oh boy.
Oh jeez, I'll call her back later. I mean, you kind of do the same thing. You want to stay as anonymous as possible, inconspicuous, wearing hoodies, but not too inconspicuous. You don't want to wear, you know, hoodies and
sunglasses
hide your face
and hoodies.
And, yeah, yeah.
No, nothing like that. I don't think I look especially like my picture that runs in print either. Like my hair is different. I'm wearing a hat right now just because I didn't feel like doing anything with my hair. But, I don't know. I people just generally don't recognize me. A lot of times I have to ask a lot of questions when I'm there because I need to know how much things cost because for the little bottom part of the article that has price ranges and stuff. So a lot of times I'm grilling bartenders on price ranges for various drinks, you know, how much is that bottle of whiskey or whatever. And a lot of times they think that I'm like a spy trying to open a bar down the street or something. Like, are you in the business? Are you opening a bar? Like, no, I'm just curious.
So do you? I mean, I guess you can't even really show up. So with like a notepad or something to be writing this stuff down, otherwise they'll kind of know what you're
doing. Yeah, that'd be kind of weird. No, I just use my phone.
So you're just like acting like you're texting or something. That's a good idea.
I'm usually with my girlfriend or with friends, and we're usually just hanging out, talking. And nowadays everyone's on their phone all the time anyway, so it doesn't really look out of place.
Have you ever had a bad experience where you maybe said unfavorable things about your experience and people come back at you?
So I actually do get some criticism from readers that I'm not hard enough on various businesses.
Oh.
And I always like to say that I don't do reviews, right? So if I were a reviewer, then it would be a matter of how good is this place? You know, a restaurant reviewer, they go in, they talk about how successful the dishes are, what the place was like, and how it stacks up relative to other restaurants in the area. And I like to think that I cover a wider spectrum, places that wouldn't rate so well if you were comparing them to other places. I'll go to a seedy, crusty old dive bar off of a, you know, major highway if I think there's something interesting about it that I want to write about. But I'll also go to high-end cocktail bars, you know, breweries, places that would be a lot easier to write something positive about. So I don't really focus on whether or not I think a place is good or bad. I just try and give people an accurate portrayal of what it's like there to kind of distill the vibe of a place into, you know, 800 words or so. So a lot of people think I'm generally too positive because I like, even with places that sometimes aren't that popular, I like to focus on the positive aspects because, you know, ostensibly people do want to go to these places. So if you're one of these people that wants to go to this place, here's what it's like. It's not really my place to tell you if it's good or bad, but you know, there have been a couple times that I've gone to a place where I was just really not impressed. And, you know, one time there was a bar that I went to where the bartender was just making all sorts of like homophobic and transphobic comments loudly at the bar and just being a complete creep. And it's just, this place had a bad reputation prior to that. I was looking it up online, as I usually do beforehand to kind of get an idea of what I'm in for. And there were several people talking about racist door guys that, you know, they got into a fight, beat up some guy using racial slurs. So I already was kind of like on the fence about this place. And I went in and heard all this stuff and everyone's laughing about it. And I was just like, this place isn't for me. And I wrote about that a little bit in my article. It was kind of a roundup of various bars fitting a certain theme. And then another time recently, I went to a bar that was kind of a newer place, had only been open since I think the beginning of the year, and I went in and it was just in shambles. I mean, like the floors were sticky and there was furniture everywhere. It wasn't even usable. It was a restaurant too, and there were booths. And I think like out of 8 booths, only one of them was actually working. The rest had like laptops and paperwork on them and you know, inverted furniture. It was just a total mess, absolute mess. And I wanted to like the place, but it was just so decrepit. And for a place that had only been open a couple months, I couldn't believe it. So I actually wrote what I would consider to be a fairly negative column about this place. I shot it over to my editor, and she actually wanted me to revisit it. And that's a common thing that food critics will do. If they go to a place and they have a bad experience, they'll go back and they'll try it again to see if it was just a fluke. Mm-hmm. And they'll go back a third time as well, just to kind of make sure that that's how things usually go. So I did make a trip back there. I should have thought about that to begin with, but I just was so, you know, impressed by the fact that this place was just so out of control. And it turns out they were undergoing some remodeling and some construction, and they were getting the floors done and all this other stuff. So it really was due to a combination of other factors, and it wasn't representative of what the place is really like. And when it was like a 180 when I went back. So, that was a case where I actually did write an entire column that I think was fairly negative, because I just thought it was not excusable. But that was on me, because I, you know, happened to run in on an off night and I didn't give them the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
So lesson learned.
I would imagine with bars, too, it's a little different than restaurants, just because how bad can a bar be, really? I mean, even a dive bar, as long as the beer's cold, you know, it's got a good vibe, good people, then it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, and actually, a lot of times in these dive bars that you normally wouldn't even give the time of day to, you can get really good service and have a really good experience. One place I went to recently was the Blind Shark Tavern in Largo, which the only reason I even went there was just because I'd driven by it a billion times. And anytime I see a place that I'm not familiar with, I just put it in a list and I go back and review it every couple months. And this was one where I noticed that they had a regularly updated website. Their Facebook was active, which is normally not stuff that you see with dive bars. They're usually just kind of like, the place is open, come in and get a drink. That's what we offer.
Right.
You know, so I figured this place, they must be taking some sort of pride in their establishment. So I figured, hey, let's check it out. So we did go and check it out. And it was great. I mean, you know, it was kind of a like smoky, crummy dive bar. There's only so much you can do about that. But great service and decent selection, good prices. Everyone was really friendly. It was a really good experience overall. Good vibe. So, yeah, I mean, I don't write off those places either.
What do you think makes a good bar, in your opinion?
Atmosphere and selection.
Selection of just what to drink, meaning?
Yeah, so it depends on what you're in the mood for. So when I go to a bar, I don't want to just go to drink just for the sake of drinking. I want to go to drink something.
Oh, that's what I do.
That's what a lot of people do, and that's fine. But for me, that may be the case if I'm just going to hang out with friends. But I still will generally want to go to a place where I know I'm going to find something that I want. But a lot of times it's something more along the lines of, I want to try this specific kind of beer, this beer that I heard about. So let's go to this brewery or this bar that has it. Or I want to get cocktails. Let's go to the place that does good cocktails. Or, you know, if I want to just go to a standard dive bar, what's a place that's going to have a decent selection or that's got a cool vibe, a place where we can hang out and have a good time? You know, not just any bar will do.
Right, right, right. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of your favorite places here.
Sure.
I mean, you know, St. Pete, but Tampa Bay in general.
Yeah.
What's your favorite brewery in Tampa Bay? And there are a lot. I didn't realize how many there were.
There's a lot.
I looked the other day, and there's just new ones all the time popping up.
Yeah, I just heard there's another one opening in St. Pete soon, I think. And we just had one open in St. Pete a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I can't really say I have a favorite. It changes on like every other favorite list I come up with. Ask me one week, and it's different than the week before. But the ones that probably stand out the most to me are Green Bench. I'm biased because of St. Pete. But I really love what Green Bench does. I think that we're lucky to have a brewery like that here that does a lot of mixed fermentation, wild ales, and food or fermented beers, stuff like that. They do a lot of really creative stuff. Interesting spot, cool place to hang out. And, of course, we have Cycle as well, downtown St. Pete. And they're really respected internationally for their giant imperial stouts that they make. I don't know if you've had any of those, but
mm-hmm.
they're pretty intense. They do those really well. And it's always nice when they put out some new stuff there. And I've always been fond of Seventh Son in Dunedin. That's another great brewery. Similar to what Green Bench does, I think they do a lot of experimental stuff that is successful more often than it's not. Gosh, I'm sure there's a few more.
There's so many.
Those are my go-tos, I would
say.
Yeah.
I go to Cage Brewing a lot, but I know the brewers there, so it's kind of biased there. And I did went to the Flying Boat. Have you been there yet?
I have been, yeah.
It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That was the newest one that just opened.
Yeah. The breweries always are just gorgeous buildings to be inside. They're always just look nice and got cool stuff in them. And
yeah, so that one was a media facility. I guess it was like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Production studio.
Oh, yeah.
They were doing commercials and stuff there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, it's a great place. All right, dive bar. Favorite dive bar in Tampa Bay?
You know, I don't even know if this would qualify as a dive. I guess it would. Yeah, this is probably the definition of a dive. But it just closed down, which is an absolute tragedy. But Fuma Bella in Ybor City, that was the best dive in Tampa Bay.
And it just closed?
Yeah, it just closed. It's on that block with the old Orpheum and New World Brewery, where the Scientology building is.
Yep.
So there's all that real estate there is kind of in danger, I guess. That whole block is vacant now, save for the Scientology building where old Orpheum was in Fuma Bella. And then I know New World is going to be gone before too long, unfortunately. Right. That's a great place, too.
Yeah.
But Fuma Bella was the best. Tiny, tiny hole in the wall, pitch black inside. Unfortunately, it would get pretty smoky in there, but, I mean, that fit the ambiance. Mm-hmm. And they just had a bartender in there that, you know, he was always in there and always had some new stuff that he was working on, experimental cocktails, just really old school and always good stuff. You know, just very unpretentious. And, yeah, I loved that place. That was great.
Cocktail bar.
Okay. So we've got some good ones in St. Pete, and I am a little bit biased. Of course, I spend most of my time in St. Pete, so I apologize if I'm coming off as being too St. Pete-centric, but Mandarin Hyde and Cask and Ale are really nice places to get cocktails. Mandarin Hyde kind of spearheaded the whole cocktail movement in St. Pete,
yeah,
along with Ciro's Speakeasy in Tampa. Those were the big ones.
There's really pretty girls in there, too.
Where's that?
In Mandarin Hyde.
Mandarin Hyde.
I'm always underdressed. I'm in shorts, and I'm like, I'm usually standing like this because it's way too crowded in there.
People get dressed up there. Yeah.
That's. I always forget that, and I try to go in there. I'm like, oh, I should leave.
You know, I also like the Hotel Bar in Tampa. Have you heard about that one?
Uh-uh.
Hotel Bar. So when I started doing this column, one of my original things was I was always in search of a bar that was just kind of a simple, plain cocktail bar like you would see in old movies. You know, there's no theme. It's not an Irish pub or whatever. It's not like it's not like a 1920s speakeasy-themed pre-prohibition deal. It's just like a bar, like a cocktail bar. And I found that a lot of times hotel lobby bars would be those kind of bars that I wanted to find. And this place in Tampa called Hotel Bar, it's downtown Tampa. It's not a hotel bar, but it's designed like a hotel bar. It's just a simple, straightforward bar like that. And the cocktails are all based on original cocktails that were made famous by hotel bartenders back in the day. So a lot of cocktail culture comes from these old hotel bars, like the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, where a lot of famous cocktails now were created back then.
Right.
So they do a lot of like their renditions of those cocktails in a really kind of stripped down, minimal vibe, but it's a really cool, chill cocktail bar. So yeah, I really like that place.
It feels like there was a time when, you know, that it was like, so I think it is now too, with all these weird, like everything's craft now, you know,
sure,
even
yeah,
with beer,
craft, right.
But there was a time when it was just like rum and Coke or Budweiser. And
yep,
now it's kind of
yep,
coming back where you have all these cool stuff that they're bringing back, all these drinks, you know, from lore, almost pulling
yeah,
them out of the basement.
Which is great. I love
yeah,
it, honestly. You know, there's another bar that I don't think gets a lot of credit for their cocktails because they're more known for entertainment or for being like a hipster bar, but the Benz in downtown St. Pete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got a whole craft menu there of drinks.
Their cocktails are great. I used to work with those guys. I would actually DJ there once a month, and so I would always go in and try the new stuff and talk to them about what cocktails they were working on. And they put a lot of thought into those, and they're always coming up with new stuff. I see that when they update on Facebook with new cocktails, and it's always really creative and interesting. And it's a lot of times not even a spin on a classic cocktail. It's like a completely new creation, and it's really good stuff. I mean, those guys, they do a great job for being a bar that isn't really considered a cocktail bar. People go there for live music and DJs and art shows and just, you know, it's a go-to hangout spot. But, I mean, the cocktails are awesome.
Yeah. That's one thing I want to ask you before we got to get out of here. But my worst nightmare when I'm at a bar is you see a guy walk in with an acoustic guitar, and he pulls it out and
oh, yeah,
plugs it in. How do you feel about, well, not only that, but performing in bars in general? Because sometimes
yeah,
you just want to chill, right? You just want to have a beer and not hear anything.
It's a tough call. I can certainly sympathize. I'm a bit of a hypocrite in that regard because when I go out to bars, I like it the quieter the better.
Yes, same.
Absolutely the quieter the better. But I've DJed in bars for years. I don't currently, but years back I was DJing weekly. And at one point I think I was DJing like three times a week at three different bars or something. I don't know. But those were kind of situations where most of the people were there for the DJ night, not just to go to the bar by itself. Like we even had a cover and everything. But I don't know. I can see both sides of it. A lot of people do go for live entertainment, and a lot of people do go just to hang out and talk to their friends. So it's kind of tough. I think there's a middle ground a lot of times. Like when I would DJ at the Benz, there's a back room where it was louder, and that was where the DJs were. And then the front room, it wasn't nearly as loud. You could have a conversation, and there was space out front, cafe seating. Mm-hmm. So it was a good mix. You could go and hang out and just talk with your friends, or you could go in the back and dance. I think that's a good setup. But yeah, I'm the same way. When I see someone walking in with a guitar, I don't hold it against them, obviously. I totally understand, and I feel for them, but I just don't.
It's a nightmare. I'm like every time just, oh, my God, I got to listen to this now.
I got to change the subject real quick and get in something real quick before we're done, because I was listening to the interview you did with Megan Habuda from Creative Loafing
uh-huh.
a couple weeks ago, and I'm listening to this, like, yelling at the phone, basically, because you guys were having the conversation about vegetarianism. And there were a couple things that came up, and I was just like, oh, man, I wish I was there to get involved in it. But because you said that you thought you heard that it was healthier to eat meat than not eat meat.
Yes.
And which is definitely not true. I mean, you could.
Not true.
Not true. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to have to send you articles.
And like, I can qualify that. So it's. You could be healthy, and I'm sorry to change the subject so radically.
That's okay.
I wanted to talk to you about it. But you could absolutely eat meat and be healthy. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that'll tell you, like, oh, you're going to die if you eat meat. And I'm like, well, I think, like, human evolution would probably beg to differ. But, yeah, I mean, it's not really my personal opinion. It's the opinion of medical organizations around the world that eating a diet low in animal fats, and especially – unsaturated fats, animal protein too, which has a link to increased chance of cancer, is associated with longer life expectancy, lower rates of like heart disease, strokes, other stuff like that, diabetes. So it absolutely can be, all things being equal, a lot healthier than eating meat. So,
right.
You know, you could certainly do it. Everyone knows somebody that's like was a vegan and they just ate like potato chips or whatever.
Yeah,
and they're
right.
like, oh, I'm not healthy. I thought vegans were supposed to be healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if you eat a good balanced diet, whether it's non-vegan or vegan, you can be healthy. But if you put the two together, you're going to have a stronger, I guess, a stronger correlation between longer life and less disease incidence with a primarily plant-based diet versus one that includes a lot of animal protein.
Personally, I'd rather eat burgers and die a few years earlier, but that's just me. Where can people read your column, Justin?
They can read it in the TBT Weekly. Every Friday, the Barfly on the Wall column comes out, and then it's generally reprinted in the Tampa Bay Times weekend section the following Thursday. I also do a weekly column focusing on local craft beer of the week. You'll also find that in there. And I usually repost stuff on Twitter. I'm trying to be better about that. You can find me on Twitter at WordsWithJG.
Pretty good. Justin, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Justin Grant. Check him out. The TBT Barfly. We had a very interesting conversation. That dude has a wild life after the podcast ended. So I want to tell you about my buddy Rafiq Shaheen, local comic, told me about the show that's happening on June 22nd. It's at the Tampa Improv, starts at 8 p.m. Rafiq is hosting. Very funny, Rio Paris and Matt Fernandez are going to be headlining that. Tickets are $7. You can go to the Tampa Improv website, or apparently you can just call in and not pay the $7 and be added to the guest list. So that's a great local lineup, so make sure you check that out. Just Google Tampa Improv, and you can find the info there. I'm not going to Google it for you. Also want to give a shout out to Joe Olinger at Anchorhead Media. Find them on Facebook. Anchorhead, all one word, and then media. He came over and told me my board is broke. I had some problems with it, but he just told me I need to get a new board. But thanks. I appreciate him coming over. So he's Bone TV's Drew Garabo's Bone TV audio video guy, and all around handsome, nice gentleman, and I like him. So check out Anchorhead Media. Make sure you like the Facebook page, HMB Radio on Facebook, and Radio St. Pete follow me on Twitter at @home_made_man, and follow Radio St. Pete. Radio STPETE. Easy as that. All right. My name is Will Koontz. This has been the Homemade Broadcast. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned for Frank Rivera's Jazz Show live from Seminole, Florida. Coming up after that is the Indie Circuit. If you're listening on podcast, hey, thank you. Make sure you leave a review, 5 stars, and say something nice about it. If you want to get in, you can leave me a message, phone or voice, 813-693-2124. Stickers are still available. Email me, bhomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. Have a great, fantastic, lovely week, and I will talk to you next week. Will Koontz, HMB Radio and Radio St. Pete. See ya.